Hi, Communion and Shalom listeners. This is Elena, the podcast manager. I also happen to lead a community house with David Frank. Today, we're bringing you a live recording of a conference workshop that David and I presented on building households and communities together. What different community models could be, some of each of our stories, what's worked, what hasn't. We presented this at the 2023 Revoice Conference, which, if you aren't familiar with it, is a conference aiming to see gay / same-sex attracted people who adhere to historic Christian teaching about marriage and sexuality experience peace and belonging in their local faith communities. Of course, all of these are also topics we care about a lot on this podcast. It was my first time attending the Revoice Conference, and this was a fun workshop to present to a very enthusiastic and sympathetic group. David and I are still learners in our journey of Christian community life, but in the spirit of sharing and learning together, we wanted to share this recording with you in all of its real-life messiness outside a podcast recording room. We've removed a few details to preserve the anonymity of people who didn't sign up to be highlighted in this podcast. We also mentioned a PowerPoint and worksheet. We'll put links to those in the show notes if you'd like to take a look. And now, on to the live recording of the workshop, Building Households Together, Nurturing Belonging and Spiritual Health.
We're going to get started. More people might walk in. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. Welcome. My name is Elena.
I'm David Frank.
And we are founders of a community house in Minnesota. We're here to talk about households and launching community houses and other related topics today. Looking forward to that with you guys. My first question before we get started for all of you, can you raise your hand if you've ever had a non-family housemate or roommate? Okay, a lot of you. It's a common experience. Raise your hand if having a roommate was a terrible experience and you thought maybe I never want to do this again. A good number of you. Also a common experience. We're going to talk about several of those dynamics today and what it looks like to live with other people as family, as community, etc. So, I will start by introducing myself briefly. My name is Elena. I live in Minnesota. David and I started a community house together. I am straight, I'm unmarried, and I really love community and living with other people. I've never wanted to live alone. So when David and I started this community house, it was just one specific story that I want to share. I told my mostly non-Christian coworkers, I'm moving into this house. There will be 4 to 6 young people in this house, all living in the same space together. And whereas that conversation with my Christian community might have been a little more skeptical for different reasons, my non-Christian coworkers mostly said, "You have a decent job. You can afford your own place." It's just very confused at why I would choose to do that. And I think that highlights the individualism and the focus on independence in the culture that we live in today. And there are big things about that, but it's a really strong message that we live in a culture that says, to be successful, you must be independent, you must live on your own. When you live with roommates that are really hard, that can really support that end of things that says it's just easier if I just don't live with other people. And sometimes we have a Christian culture that says success equals kind of a version of that independence that says success equals 2 people going off and getting married and living on their own, in their own house by themselves without necessarily being part of a larger network. So part of being in a community house in building households with other people, whether you're married to them or not, is in some ways a pushback on that culture of what does it look like to be Christian family to each other and what are the models that we engage with to do that.
And one of the things that we'll be kind of pulling out is the difference between just like living in the same room with other people or in the same house versus actually being like, what makes a household? So there's this wonderful quote from a book I highly commend from Andy Crouch, The Life We're Looking For, that I'm gonna read from. How do you know if you're part of a household? You are part of a household if there is someone who knows where you are today and who has at least some sense of how it feels to be where you are. You are part of a household if people know things about you that you do not know about yourself, including things that if you did know, you would seek to hide. You are part of a household if others are close enough to see you and know you as well as or better than you know yourself. You are part of a household if you experience the conflict that is the inevitable companion of closeness. If someone else makes such demands on you that you sometimes fantasize about driving them out of your life. This is the one thing we need more than any other, a community of recognition. So just to give a little flyby, of our hour together, we're gonna start talking about our own shared household. We're gonna talk about the differences between community, new monasticism, households, how do we understand these different kind of ideas, categories, insights and practices that have practically helped us, and some time for Q&A.
So let's start with, what is our particular community? I usually describe our house as an intentional Christian community. Here's our laundry. I didn't know that was the first picture.
I might have added that.
And though in essence it is usually 4 to 6 people living in a house in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We have some shared rhythms. We eat meals together at least once a week. We have pray together twice a week. We do chores, maybe together or not. We do some community hospitality outreach kinds of events that we all agree to be part of. We have a shared covenant, which I would say is one of the things that makes it more than just a collection of roommates. It can be a really, like a broad range of like, we just live together versus a very close relationship. But we have a document that kind of outlines some of the values and practices that we have in our community that we aim toward. So some of those values include worship, purity, simplicity, hospitality, justice. We kind of talk through those different aspects.
Is that something you're willing to share?
Yes, we would love to share it. At least the simplified version that makes sense for people to see. Love to share that afterward. We kind of talk through some of the details of what that looks like in our practices as well to pursue each of those things together. I think a distinctive thing people often ask about, we share food. So sometimes it can be challenging to share food with people, but it has worked well for us so far that we have a common, kind of everyone buys food and everyone eats it together, and that has worked well. Right now it's been mostly young people. For the most of the time, I have been the oldest person in the house. For most people in their 20s, we would envision that this model could include people who might be a married couple who move in, people who might be older and single who move in. But for the most part, that's what it's been. Go ahead.
We've had, in just the 4 years, a lot of different iterations of kind of household gatherings. One of the things that makes a household is that you're all like there in the same place. And then when you're in quarantined during COVID, you're really there in the same place with each other. I told everybody at the beginning of quarantine, you guys are going to get sick of me before I get sick of you. You can ask Elena later how long that may have took. But during that time, you know, we're just like, what do we do while we're sitting here all together? And we have some creative minds in the house. And so we got a few copies of The Importance of Being Earnest. And we did a live Zoom play together as a household, which was just...
I'm not an actor at all. We did this thing on multiple screens. I think we had like 6 family members watch this start to finish because it was terrible. Bad British accents, the whole works. It was... Yeah, no dress rehearsal. It was a great time. But we have a lot of fun, and it's been fun to engage the different things that people in the house want to do. I think it's easy to be like, we're all really serious, and we do this serious thing. Sometimes that's true, but it's people living together, and you do what works with the community. So.
You know that we're not the best actors, and the star of the show was our dog, Little Bear. Yeah. She did amazing.
Sorry, tell us about this.
So you might be wondering about how did this actually come about? I've been living in community for a while. My name is David Frank. I was born and raised as a Mennonite in Arizona, came to college at a Christian school, Northwestern in Minnesota. And that was my first kind of outside of my Christian family household, my first exposure of this like, oh, Christian community, what goes on here? Like, this is super fun living in the dorms. I could live in the dorms forever. So maybe tells you a little bit about me. And then after, as I graduated, I was just like, okay, Lord, I don't want to live alone. Should I move into the basement of a family? And I was like, the Lord actually kind of answered my, he planted that desire to live in the dorms forever. And that I moved into a different Christian community house near the University of Minnesota. And I was kind of the house director there for a while and continued to get this more exposure of, oh, what does different forms of intentional Christian community house look like? And then I was praying and praying. Well, I can't live in Dinkytown, that's the college area near the U of M, forever. Don't want to really be on frat row forever. So I want to kind of see something happen in a neighborhood, you know, where there's just like kids running around. And I realized I could not do this alone. It would be actually really stupid to start a community that's about community by my own power. And like, yeah, it has to be an us thing. And so I prayed, Lord, who's the second person that could make it from a me to a we? And I was carpooling one day with Elena to a church member's play and was talking about my hopes and dreams for community. And she said, oh, I'm really interested in that. My eyes got wide. Like, how interested? A couple hours later, we talked more. 3 weeks later, I called her and said, there's a house I want to buy that meets all my criteria. How serious and interested are you? And she said, I'm not uninterested. and then our house came about. More or less like that. It's, you know, some leaps of faith, and we've gotten to know each other really well. And this is a photo of us kind of in that first summer at the house of like, what are the values that we want to have in our covenant? We just brought a lot of people into our living room to have meals together to discuss what community looked like. It was a really fun time, and our covenant came soon after that, and we've had different people living in there. You want to share a little bit about just how you've come into...
It's been an adventure. I'm not generally a risk taker. I know I live in a community house, so there is a certain level of risk involved in living with that many other people. I just have valued community for a long time, mostly since college as well, living in the dorms and being an RA, and just there's a kind of community that comes out of that you kind of never get naturally in a state of life ever again. And I had been praying about opportunities to do that more. Hospitality is very dear to my heart, and caring well for people, and wanting to cook meals that more than just I eat. I value that, it's important. It's been 4 years and a roller coaster of a ride, and different people move in and out and are processing different things and are caring about different things, and it's been, yeah, really, really life-giving part of my life. I think it's important to say that I don't just see this as like, well, I'm single now, but I would like to be married, and this is just a holding pattern until then. That I think that the community living models that we're going to talk about can and should include married people, and that, yeah, it's important that we are all the community together. And not isolating either way in whatever stage of life you're in. I think I'll also add, for most of the time, maybe it's 50% of the time I've been in this house, I've been the only woman, which if I had known, I probably wouldn't have done, because I didn't intend to be like me and four guys for a whole year. I was very freaked out for the first 3 weeks. I was like, what have I done? And that year was really great. And in a lot of ways, very life-giving and giving me really great brother relationships.
I don't think I initially mentioned, so whatever language you can kind of consider, I'm not straight, same-sex attracted, gay, queer, and so that's factored into my own discernment journey and the Lord making me really excited about singleness, particularly in seeing just how lonely America is, and that even, actually, this house, I was praying for a two-block radius around my friends from church, a mom and dad lawyer with two little girls, and I was like, they have no margin for community. And they're in a neighborhood that I really cared about. And so I was like, Lord, I want to build a community house that's both a household that's, you know, healthy, and we'll get into that, but it's also a community for those who don't have community in their own burdens. And so that's just part of my own journey of being excited about singleness, and hopefully the Lord, the Lord will do whatever good things he wants with my life. If he makes me get in a mixed orientation marriage down the road, his will be done, but I am excited for what I'm working on right now. And I want to share a little bit of just, like what this household has really meant to me. Part of it, so we talked about, you know, spiritual health and belonging is what we've talked about in this taglines. And those are kind of different aspects of the first greatest commandments, right? To love God and to love each other. Like, are we in a household where we belong, we are loving each other, there's that beloved community, and are we in a household that is helping us be healthy spiritually, helping us love God and grow in relationship with him? And sometimes, there's so many dynamics of that, and one of the often overlooked dynamics of that is kind of the basic economics of daily life. And if God is our creator and we are to have his love infuse it in all of our life, that looks like caring for the things that he has created. And that's actually part of our like love and worship of him. And so being able to be in a household where we're like, oh, what are our shared values? How do we want to do things? Do we want to compost? Do we want to get chickens together? And thinking about these things, not buying partially out of the like, it'd be fun to have chickens. But also it's like, oh, now like our food scraps get to go to the chicks, and then the chickens are like giving us eggs, and it's this little ecosystem going on. And it's just like, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona desert, you know? So there's just like, I thought all things that were edible came from the grocery store. And now I've discovered that like the chickens can be right here. Mulberries fall from the heavens and just like you can eat them. And it's so cool. And like all of this, I want to make sure our category of like spiritual health is not just like devotional life, but it is also like, how are we practicing stewardship? And it's really hard. Like if you want to minimize plastic usage as just like an isolated individual, you're just like, oh, the system, like I go to this store and they give me all this plastic. I buy this on Amazon, so much plastic. And then once you form a household, you're like, okay, we actually have a little box where we can start making intentional decisions. We can take this little tub and go to the Terra Market and refill our peanut butter. And like, one plastic tub down, let's do it again. Praise God. These are like some of the parts about household economic life that are actually a huge part of our spiritual formation, is that daily life. And it's so much easier to do that when you have people next to you who each bring their own kind of passions and interests, and are able to like bring up, you know, it's like Elena's really passionate about, what are you
Uptown. did you have more things you were gonna say?
About sharing food.
I am passionate about sharing food.
Yeah.
What I would say to follow that is just like, I think that there's a multiplication that can happen when you live with other people, in that your household can maybe not just do more in a productive sense, but engage differently and care about what each other cares about. And for me, that is a lot of like, I get to cook a meal that I would not otherwise cook because now six people are going to eat it instead of me eating it six times, which I don't want to do.
She's also really good at salads and soups, and I have learned that canning is still a really practical thing to do these days.
You're going going to make us sound way more impressive than we are. yeah, I guess I would just say, to add on to that, I think something that has been a real value in my life is the rhythms that we get in as a house. There are times where I'm like, I probably would be skipping praying for far longer than I want to, maybe weeks at a time, but we have that built in, and people are pulling me along. And that can be the only thing that I'm doing, but they are pulling me along and encouraging me in their spiritual walk. And in the practical daily life of like, we all going to try to compost together, so let's try to make this happen. And everything in between. Living with people who have those shared rhythms and shared values is easier than trying to do it on your own if you're going the same direction. I really valued that.
Not only do we have like a shared meal together at least once a week, but we are actually common pantry. We have a shared fridge, all our groceries are in together. And there's that kind of like economic solidarity in this small way. There are, you know, when you grow up with your parents or parent, they're buying all your groceries and you're not like, oh, how do I like fend for myself? You know, you belong because you're fed and because you go to the pantry and it's our pantry. And to be able to experience that still in daily life is such a blessing. There are times and different circumstances where things, dietary restrictions, etc. But being able to say, you know, just because like your housemate, he's a soccer player and he probably eats twice as much as everybody else, like we're not gonna like nickel and dime him because he belongs here. And we do this together. These are some awesome neighbors. They're super cool. I think there's just, yeah, like that's part of that partnership, you know, of just something that I think that my heart craves a lot is like, I just can't do everything alone by myself. Like I need people to partner with, and it's hard to find, you know, just like someone who's equally passionate. But when you're in a household, there's just ways of like, hey, I wanna get to know those neighbors over there, but I'm a little scared to go by myself. Can you come with me? And the other person's like, wasn't on my radar at all, but I'm happy to like partner with you in this. And that's just some of the multiplying effect of being in a household.
All right, next question. Show of hands if you want. How many of you have ever felt like being a real adult means living on your own? Or maybe even just having like your own parking spot or toaster oven or whatever. Yeah. That gets to some of what I was talking about before with that kind of pressure to be individual and independent. And I think one of the things that we're thinking about a lot is not just independence, but interdependence, and how do we mutually share and connect in ways that both of us are cared for and both of us are contributing to the relationship, to the group, etc. I want to shift a little bit now to talk about kind of four terms, four abstract models that kind of bleed into each other. Just to give you a sense of the kinds of things that are out there. I'm sure there's others that I'm not aware of. I'd love to hear about them. Community is a word we throw around a lot. It means a lot of things. It can mean very, very tight-knit group that does everything together and lives together. It can mean a demographic collection of people across a huge area. So that is a word, and I think it's a useful word, but there's some more specific words that we use. I said I would call our community an intentional Christian community. And that is a common word that's used in certain circles. There are people that say, I live in an intentional Christian community, and there's a network of them. And those would be generally defined, they do different things, but generally local Christians with regular shared commitments. They have some shared economic commitments. I would say each of these words means something. They're intentional. We have some regular rhythms. A Christian, we have some specific creeds and things that we are aligning with. And we're seeking to do community aspects of community together, living together, and so on. New monasticism is maybe familiar to some of you. I came across this in college and was fascinated by it. And it is a similar kind of model in some ways and different in others. I would describe it as many mostly Protestant Christian groups kind of trying to recover what they see in Acts 2 about how the early church engaged. And in some ways, I think trying to engage, recover, build a tradition that the Catholic and Orthodox Church has had for many, many years of this kind of monastic living. So an emphasis on simplicity, an emphasis on justice, an emphasis on hospitality. There's a resource, which we will hand out later in the sheet we're gonna hand out, where a bunch of these groups got together in, I think, 2007 and wrote the 12 Marks of New Monasticism. So we're not gonna spend a lot of time on that today, but if you are interested, it's a fascinating direction to research and look into. And some very dedicated, thoughtful, contemplative, dedicated Christians who are doing that work. Another distinctive there is that, unlike most Catholic orders, they do have married couples as well in that group. And then the term household, which David's going to talk about.
So briefly, you can see the definition. The people recognize the sharing a common house and its shared life. And I think that's big distinction between isolated roommates who happen to be kind of under the same roof, but are, you know, as much as possible, they maybe avoid sharing any types of life, sharing food or conversation. But I'm going to talk about just where, like, how might I, you know, I've highly invested in intentional Christian community, but this idea of households specifically just began to kind of root in my thinking, and as a lot of it started in scripture, of just seeing different ways that the scriptures are not always going back to family, but are going back to household. And it's like, well, what's going on here? And then you start to learn more about, you know, both, well, we live in a neighborhood where it's 30% Latino. And so we see households that are not the typical, like, American 2.3 or whatever it is, children, but it's grandmas and aunties and cousins, and they're all living together in this household. And sometimes even, like, distant, because, you know, just whoever needs to find a place in that home is now part of their household. And that's much more like what, really, throughout the, like, entire, like, human history, households have been much more complex, much more full, much more interconnected. And so there's a responsibility, you can see in 1 Timothy, to provide for your own, often translated your own family, but especially for those in your household. And in my own thinking, kind of my favorite way of understanding baptism now, of like, oh, is it infant? Is it adult? I'm not going to go into this, but actually think of household baptism as kind of my, like, theological category, because God's actually very purposely built us to belong to households. You can even see in 1 Timothy 3, you know, that the church is thought about as the household of God, also the family of God. These aren't, you know, mutually exclusive, but the household of God is the church, a pillar and buttress of the truth. And it's a really powerful, I think, concept that we've left behind a lot in our modern era. I want to point out specifically with intentional Christian communities, they often contain many households. For those who were in Lynn Malone's workshop yesterday, she mentioned that, so as a community, they all commit to having morning prayer every morning. But in one household, that's at 6 a.m., and at one household, that's at 9:30 a.m. So each of these households within the greater intentional Christian community have their own kind of unique way of life, the ways that they're sharing together. And so they have common covenant commitments broadly, but how those are getting worked out more intimately and relationally are often going to happen in the household. And so right now where we live is a solo household intentional Christian community. So normally we're calling ourselves an intentional Christian community, but I've been realizing how much of the just fruitfulness that I've received in my own life is just because I'm in a loving household. Like, I'm with people who I share life with. And so I just want to hit on some of the main points of what that is. A household shared life is, there's close proximity. You bump into each other. You, like, don't have to plan on, like, you know, asking your housemate to like hurry up out of the bathroom. I need to get ready for work. Like, you don't have to plan that engagement. It's just happening. And then we've already talked about this economic sharing. And they're really important for us as persons growing up to be more and more like Jesus. As we practice these muscles of cooperation, collaboration, and sharing. These are muscles that we're not good at generally in the United States. The kind of way that what we view as progress is usually being empowered to do everything yourself because you have resources, because you have wealth or technology. And these are actually weakening our muscles of how to practically depend on one another. Elena mentioned interdependence. I want to read another quote from St. Andy Crouch, from the Zen Book. We need a place where we can invest ourselves deeply in others, come to care about their flourishing, and give ourselves away in mutual service and sacrifice in ways that secure our own identities instead of erasing them. The name for this kind of place is the household. The household is the fundamental community of persons, built on more than an isolated pair, but encompassing few enough people that all can be deeply and truly and persistently noticed and seen. The household is perfectly sized for the recognition we are all looking for the moment we were born.
I just want to say that I think it can be really easy to hear some of these stories and maybe these quotes, and that it can either sound impossible to do something like this, or possibly, if we're painting too rosy of a picture, it can sound really easy. And I think neither of those things has to be true, is true. I see a lot of what we are doing is just living with people and trying to do it well. Living with people is tough. They're irritating and they don't think like you. And it's hard. And you don't think like them. And they're like, why are you doing that dumb thing? And you have to work it out. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for growth and for God to work in all of us as we try to love each other well, in spite of and maybe because of our thorny edges and pieces that we don't like or that other people don't like. I think it's valuable, and I would encourage you, if you're like, that's impossible, it's not, but keep thinking through, and if you're thinking it's really easy, keep trying it. It's both.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
This piece of being recognized for who you are, like so much of what our hearts long for, to be come home to a place that feels like home, and that it takes work and long, and each of us have our own like scars that we bring to the table, or different family cultures that we come from of how to deal with conflict, or how much my voice is cared for and heard. And there's a beloved friend that I think of a lot in how their time at a different Christian community house has been both just some of that deeply I can be myself. I can come home. I'm loved. These people care about me. It brings me so much more life and stability. And then simultaneously can come to that because of these old wounds and deep heart beliefs, I don't know how. There's just this does my voice matter here? Am I loved? If I disappeared, would they care about me at all?
And we can't fix all that. We can't make all that better. That is not a thing where we can say, oh, just step in and love you more and finally you'll believe us. So it's also a process of us figuring out how to love that housemate well. In the midst of where they're at.
But there is something you can do,
yeah,
right?
It's
like you can't fix it, but this is the household of Christ's love that you are trying to build. And so it puts you in a place of humility of just like, Lord, I've been trying to love them. I've loved them in all these ways, and then they don't see it. Like, And so, you know, you can like read the love languages book, yeah, that might help. And then it's, you know, in what ways do I need therapy? Do my housemates need to go to therapy to help work on these deeper matters? And then just pray, like, Lord, help me to love in a way that they can receive it and that ultimately your love will be known through it. And what I've found is being able to like be around for that suffering and not trying to fix it. I'm an engineer, so I love fixing things. But I think we all know you shouldn't do that to each other. and so actually just like, okay, David, like hold back. Let me just be like, I'm sorry. This time in your life is really difficult, but I still want to be here with you. And that communicates way more than me putting like 30 hours of problem solving into it.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that helps with kind of helping people in that recognition space is that we do have a small household. It's not huge. It is possible for me to say, I haven't seen you in 3 days. Have you been sleeping? Like, how are you doing? Because there's only up to six of us. And that, it just practically, that's helpful for us.
Yeah.
Okay, we should move on to some specific insights and practices that we've learned. Again, I don't think any of this is magic. This is just things that we have found helpful or that we've learned sometimes the hard way over 4 years.
Yep. So one of the first things in our covenant is talking about like what are our shared values as a community. So one example of that is our shared value of purity. And we list a bunch of different kind of ways that works out. But one of them is saying like we want a pure relationship with like entertainment and media that it's not just consuming our lives. And there's different communities that have put in like even rules of like no TVs in the bedrooms so that we're always watching movies together and not just like going on Netflix for 3 days straight without talking to anybody. Specifically for us, it's like, oh, okay, we value purity and we're also valuing community. And so we're not going to have a TV in our living room because I'm just so prone to like seeing those glowing LEDs and being like, I have to watch them. They're calling my name right now. There's not TV here. There's just a coffee table and some seating, and it helps us focus on each other.
Yeah, and I would add to the shared values. If you have shared values with the people you live with, it makes so many things possible. And if you don't share the same values, even small things can be really hard. And we have run into both of those things. It can be so amazing to be going the same direction. And you just have to move a lot slower in a lot fewer places if you're not going the same direction in what you value. So just something to think about. Celebration is a spiritual discipline. I don't naturally do this very well. It's been really fun to live with housemates who are really good at throwing parties. And none of us can compete with some of our Hispanic neighbors who are way better at throwing parties.
So good.
And just leaning into, like, we're not doing this for any other purpose. We're celebrating because God's given us reason to celebrate. And that is, I think, an important element to community. Another thing that I really value about living with other people is conflict. Nobody likes conflict. Well, a few people like conflict, but most of us
don't. Those are hates.
And I also don't like conflict, but I have seen so much spiritual growth in me and other people by leaning into productive conflict. There's a way to do conflict that's not productive, that's unhealthy. But also, a lot of us are scared of conflict because we just don't have a lot of practice. Living in community gives you practice. It really does. Like, it can be a small thing. Why are you hanging your towel on that hook? I needed that hook. Or it can be a really big thing. One of the conversations we've had a lot in our house is around sexuality and how we engage with it, even at a theoretical level, like what is our shared value here? Both of those ends of the spectrum of conflict are important to engage with and to lean in to ask God, what are you doing here? And how can I love this person well and pursue you with them and independently?
There's a dynamic that we've discovered living in community and living in a neighborhood where one of our values is like neighborliness. That when God said, love your neighbor, he meant it. It wasn't a spiritual metaphor. But in that kind of household dynamic, there are some that are more homebodies. Let's like stay here. Let's steward this space and let's hang out with each other. And there are those who want to go into the neighborhood, want to go out into the city, into the world, And both of those are, whether for fun or for justice, or both of those at the same time, and they're really both important. If you have a household that is becomes just all-inclusive, what's the word I'm looking for?
Ingrown.
It's
too focused
inward. Yeah, it's just too focused inward, and it's lacking something. And if you are, if everybody's running out of the home all the time, that probably means you have a big dish pile that's, you know, growing stuff in your kitchen. And then you also, like, have you spent the time to start building those relationships of trusting one another? And that, like, can you come home exhausted after giving yourself out and someone's actually made that meal where you feel are receiving that love? And so both being able to try to balance that, maybe even find the different strengths and weaknesses, and just being aware of those dynamics of, like, oh, so you can kind of, again, partner with each other and say, oh, I love going out all the time, but this person wants us to be home more. Okay, let's talk about our needs here, and help meet each other in those things.
For those of you who are thinking about community, about engaging with it, about maybe starting something like that, I think it is, or joining one, it's useful to think about your expectations and boundaries in it. So the flip side of my non-Christian coworkers saying, why would you even care about doing this, was my maybe more rural Christian community, conservative community, that were pretty uncomfortable with me moving into a house of guys. And they just, one of the things that made them more comfortable with it was me saying, I am the house manager, which gave me a title, and they were okay with that. But, I really resisted the house mother title because I was like, I'm not cleaning up your mess. But there's a dynamic where that's true, and I think it's worth thinking about, like what is your relationship to this community? What does your larger community think about it? And not just necessarily throwing that out. I think the community lifestyle can attract people who are more countercultural, maybe like kind of a rebel hippie crowd. It's a lot of fun. And also, it's worth thinking through, why am I joining this? What do I want out of this? How am I engaging with this well? I think there's another subset of that, which is thinking about the boundaries that you engage with. So whether you're queer or straight, thinking about, especially in a mixed men and women community, especially in a mixed anything community, we have both queer and straight people in our house, considering your attractions and what will help you and others seek God well, I think is really important. For me, living in a house with a bunch of men, I was like, I don't want to be in a situation where I have to be negotiating that. We have a rule in our house that I would boil down to is, like, we don't date someone else in the house. And that is a really useful rule for us, and it makes it more likely that more women will live in this house, which I find really interesting. But one of those boundaries that I've set for myself is, like, I don't want to use the same bathroom as all the guys. This is my bathroom. And that is a useful boundary for me that other people have helped maintain. So I don't think there's any rule that says just do this and everything's great. But I think it's really worth thinking about how you engage with that and, your relationship with that.
I want to talk through expectations from a household. Especially for those of us who are single and we're looking for that deep emotional intimacy. But a household community does not equal best friends. It can sometimes be a fertile ground for creating incredibly meaningful friendship. And it may even be your best friends come out of different living situations. Some of your best friends, you realize, you don't live together well. That's also a possibility. But being able to just know your expectations coming in, and there's grieving that can come with it, because even when you're like mentally, I know that this does not equal this, sometimes your heart wants it to be. So like right now, I kind of half jokingly, mostly not jokingly at all, just say that like, I'm going to be at this house until I bury myself in the backyard. So working on the mechanisms to have that happen. Sorry, where was I talking about? But with my, like, I'm ready to be here, unless the Lord does something very different. I'm ready to be here, and knowing that, like, any of my housemates who I deeply care about, who, like, now for 4 years we've been doing life together with, investing in each other, investing in this household, like, something could happen, and they could be gone in a month. And, you know, like, if we just dwell on that, that can make you really scared. And I just keep going, like, I prayed, and the Lord brought Elena into my life to help start this household. And if the Lord was good 4 years ago, the Lord will still be good.
Amen.
And so, like, when the Lord calls Elena to help another household become something really, really beautiful, where many people come to know the love of Christ through another household that Elena helps over see and invest in, Lord will provide whatever partners I need wherever else he calls me. And so I hope, you know, that wonderful, fun people will move into our house. But they're meaningful. They're so meaningful to have brothers and sisters who we grow in learning to love each other. And specifically, it is a great place for unexpected mixed orientation friendships.
Yeah, I have found this to be a really great place. To have friendships with, particularly with other queer housemates. And someone asked, why is it important that you have maybe gay and straight people living together? And I can only speak for myself, and that I think it's been a really valuable part of my own journey. I mean, I literally wouldn't be at this conference if I didn't live with David.
Or now is the production manager for Communion Shalom, because she's heard a lot of conversations about gay stuff.
We talk a lot about sexuality. and that has been a really big learning curve in my life. I feel like it's really important for that reason. And I think, as I said before, this should never be, community living is not for everybody, but I don't think it should be a model that says, well, it's just for the straight people until they get married and then they can go do their other thing. And I think we need to build models that have more complex relationships in them than just,
Amen.
It's a bunch of single people. It's been great for those reasons. Are you open for questions?
I'll say one last thing before Q&A. I've had other friends who, like a gay neighbor who I was really hoping might move into our house because of that. Like, oh, we're on the same route. We got the same vision. But the Lord has called her to start a household in a different part of Minneapolis. So it's exciting to still have that kind of kinship of heart, even though she's not one of the persons who's going to be part of our house. Just as Elena said too, it's meaningful to me as well to have straight friends that are partnering with me, that understand me. It's been really beautiful. And my last exhortation, I just want to specifically, like, the reason this of households, of just like, if you are straight, you have a calling to make your household look like the kingdom of Christ.
Amen.
And welcoming in people on the margins.
Amen.
And if you are on the margins, you have a very similar calling to invest in households to wherever God leads you, so that the kingdom of Christ is established, so that people are welcomed in. And we so much think about just like God working through the big things, big Revoice conferences, big churches, big ministries, and what we see, cannot get into the number of just societal ills that are because people don't have a home to come to where they feel loved and someone can just say, what do you need for the next day? And we can create households where we're providing that for each other. And then as we get healthy and strong and are re-nourished, we can start to provide that for others. So if our friends actually really quick can start, there's our worksheets. Can you please distribute those? And on one side is just a list of 10 of resources, including a link to our values and vision. We have a fuller covenant. You can always email us and we can give you that to you as well. On the other side of this worksheet is a list of questions that if you are thinking about how God might be calling you to invest in household life. It starts with the questions of just, well, what are my capabilities right now? Maybe you are barely making it through day by day. You have a terrible job. You have really a lot of tensions in your family, and you actually need to find maybe another household that you can receive from for a while to help you into a healthier place where then you can give more to others. So it's important to just assess, what's my capacity? What in my current house? Am I the owner of the house? Am I a renter? Each of these things are giving you have different ways you can influence the space, the culture of the relationships, to think through those things. And then you can kind of assessing your current situation, really just think about what's the next step God has me to help make a household look more like Jesus. And it may be something really small and just leaning into that.
Thanks for coming. If you'd like to chat or ask more questions afterward, we'd love to talk.
Thank you.
Hey listeners, I want to let you know about the Communion and Shalom Patreon. Joining the Patreon community not only supports this podcast, but gives you the opportunity to listen to bonus content, give input on future episodes, and submit questions for a patron-only Q&A. We're so thankful for the support and encouragement from so many listeners, and we hope that this podcast continues to be meaningful to you.